I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening. I love that you're listening to this right now. That makes me very, very happy, and I just want you to know that. I have a great show for you today. My guest is from Sleep at the Wheel. Her name's Elizabeth McQueen. She's also a fantastic solo artist, singer-songwriter. She has a record out called Laziest Girl in Town. She and her husband are both in Sleep at the Wheel. This is an interesting conversation. I didn't know her before this. Turns out she's a great hang. We had a fantastic time talking. And she and her husband actually came out to the live podcast last week. It was great to see them. It was great to meet him, David Sanger. I'm going to have him on the show. All right. So before we get to this interview, it's going to be a good one. I'm going to fill you in on some information. I am playing Thursday. If you're in Austin, Texas, I'll be at the Saxon Pub Thursday night, 8 o'clock. It's June 27th, 2013, in case you're listening to this 5 years from now. It's not happening that maybe it is. I don't know. We'll see what's going on. Anyway, so come out to the solo show. They're always fun. You know, I got some songs, I got some stories, and I do it. That's what I'm doing. Had a great week last week. Had the live podcast. It was fantastic. I went out and saw some great music. I saw some great comedy. I saw Alejandro Escovedo and the Sensitive Boys play at the Continental Club, play their last show of their residency. That was fantastic. My ears are still ringing. I saw Jesse Dayton Thursday at the Broken Spoke. Fantastic show. He's such a great performer, such a great musician, and such a great guy on stage. Amazing. I love that guy. Nice guy, too. His show airs on Friday, by the way, Jesse Dayton. We talk about his music and the zombie movie that he's got coming out, Zombex. What's up? All right. Also, I saw some great comedy. I saw The Punch Show Tuesday, hosted by my friend Matt Bearden, who's also going to be a guest on the show coming up in the, hopefully, the near future. Fantastic comics. Always a great show at Cap City Comedy Club. Starts at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays. Get out there, see that. And also, I saw my friend Lucas Melendez, who's the host of the Late Show at the Velveeta Room, which I went to, which is here in Austin as well. And I was there. I saw my friend John Toll freak on a guy. Well, I was in the bathroom, so I didn't see the beginning of the freak, but I walked in on him literally like pushing shit out of the way and walking to this dude out in the audience. And my friend John Toll is fucking huge and tattooed. And he's like this, he's literally labeled the quote unquote slayer of comedy. Mary Lynn Rice Cub showed up. That was awesome. And she was going to go up, but I think John's explosion blew her away. And I don't think she could have followed it. And Lucas is always incredibly funny. You know him from the show. And we go on the Charlie Hodge show together a lot. And it looks like we're going to be doing some stuff. We talked this morning a little bit about maybe getting together and doing some more stuff. Collaborations, right? I have a great evening planned tonight. I want to tell you, I'm going to go see the movie, A Band Called Death. And then I'm going to go see them. But I was invited by their management. And I get to go to like the sound check and everything. So hopefully I submitted a little proposal, which I kind of had to do in a formal way, which I don't normally do, but I'm totally willing to do it, to talk to these guys. They have a fantastic story. They were a band in the 60s, all black dudes, heavy metal, called Death. So no one would sign them. And then they just faded away. And now their shit's been rediscovered. Turns out they've influenced all these people. And here they are, guys like from the 60s. So they must be pretty old, like at least 60 themselves, right? Pretty cool. I'm looking forward to hopefully talking to them. I really hope I do. Anyway, it's been a great weekend. I'll tell you, on the pool party front, there was no dice. There was a pool party going on here yesterday, and it was awful. Awful music, awful people, my apartments. This is, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it here this summer. I'm going to have to find other pools. Tweet at me. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Go to the Facebook page. How did I get here? Like that page. And you can follow me on Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Tweet at me if you want to invite me to a pool party. Give me an address. Give me a situation. Dress code. What do I need to bring? And I'll show up. All right. My guest today is a singer-songwriter. She's also in Asleep at the Wheel. She's a wife. She's a mother. A lot of things going on here. Her name is Elizabeth McQueen. I didn't know her before this interview, but she is fantastic, man. She came over to the house a few weeks ago. We sat down here at the apartment and chatted away. I didn't want to stop talking to her. Fantastic person, great story, really amazing music, and a super phenomenal talent. So we talk about how do you do it? How do you juggle all that stuff? How do you travel in your own car outside of the bus with the band, with your husband and your kids and just the whole shebang, man? She does it, though, and she does a great job of it. And she's a fantastic hang. So sit down and enjoy my conversation with my new friend, Elizabeth McQueen. They live with an ex of mine, and all I could think was, oh, cool, what movie should I watch?
Yeah.
Like, that means I could probably start watching movies at around 3.
Yeah.
That's the rest of the day and do nothing.
We just had a gig in Colorado. It was literally, it was a one-off gig. So we took the bus up there and came back, and it was cheaper for us just to hire someone to watch the kids. Because usually, like, I'll fly in and fly out if we have someone watch the kids at home. But it was actually cheaper for me to just go up there.
So the Sprinter thing is something you did in the past?
We still do the Sprinter thing, but now it's like with two kids, if they're going to come, they can't...
Wait, when you say one-off gigs for you or for Asleep at the Wheel?
For Asleep at the Wheel.
Okay.
Yeah. So I got to ride the bus up, like 18 hours up to Colorado, play a gig 18 hours back, and all I did the whole time was watch Fringe. I fell into this like massive Fringe hole and just like...
Oh, Fringe.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. Is it good?
Yeah. I'm a big sci-fi person though.
You are?
Yeah. I'm totally like...
You look like you'd be a sci-fi person.
I'm kind of nerdy.
You got
looking.
A call? You want to get that?
Sure.
This is all my favorite part of the show.
I totally thought that I'd turn that off.
Do you have a Marc Maron
I do.
Bag?
I do. And I didn't pick it up to show you. But I did think about the fact that like you might be impressed.
And when I saw the cats on there, I was like, wait a minute.
So yeah, for Christmas 2 years ago, my sister who got me into WTF got me the bag and the live CD. So his comedy CD. So
oh, yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
You like him as a comic?
I do. I really like him as an interviewer.
Me too.
Yeah.
I like him as a comic a lot. He's like pretty much my favorite. I mean, have you seen him?
I haven't seen him. No.
Watching him is different than those records. And also, you're just like, you see what it's like, what happens when you've done this for that long.
Right. When you're like a total pro to like the very bone pro. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like watching, I guess, whatever people happen to people when they watch Paul McCartney the other night.
Oh, yeah. Everyone who saw that said it was like fucking awesome. And to me, I was like, because Dave and I thought about going and then we thought like, well, I don't know. It's so expensive. And are we doing it to see Paul McCartney? Or are we doing it just to like check Beatle, saw a Beatle live?
Yeah, or Instagram.
Yeah. Instagram it. We did this. But man, everyone who went said it was like fucking great, which is really nice too.
Yeah.
You know?
Are you a Beatle person?
I mean, I like the Beatles. Dave is like a Beatle maniac. Like, because Dave was born in 61, so he kind of grew up just after, you know, all the Beatles stuff had happened.
And
he's crazy for the Beatles. So,
were his parents? Beatles were just like, at some point when I was like 4, I thought I was friends with them. Like,
oh,
I just,
really?
In my mind, I thought, like, I knew them somehow.
Yeah, I mean, because they were so omnipresent, like, culturally omnipresent. Like,
I
totally know the Beatles. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he wanted to be the Beatles. And he still talks about it. Like, it's like this amazing confluence of events that these, you know, 4 guys got together and were able to, like, almost create the culture of the time. Like, it was you know.
And a culture that lasted.
Yeah, that lasted. I mean, and those songs hold up. Yeah. Like, yeah, and they everyone really wants do. To be the Beatles.
And they blew the curve.
Yeah.
You can't really...
Will anyone ever do that again?
You can't.
Because culture will never be as homogenous as it was. I mean, even if there was someone in one genre who was, like, hitting it that hard and just, like, hit after hit after hit, everyone likes lots of different things. But, like, at the time, the culture was a lot more homogenous, so everyone liked the Beatles, yeah. You know?
So, yeah. You didn't have as many choices as you do now.
It's too many choices now.
There's a lot of choices.
Yeah. There's so many choices.
This conversation started, it just kind of went off the rails. I don't even know what to talk
about.
I
didn't even know if we were even recording, so.
Oh, wait, neither do I. Yeah.
Okay. I thought we were just talking, actually. And then it was like, are we
No, recording? We are. That's the whole thing.
Right on.
So so I saw you playing on a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
You're wearing like a green sweater kind of thing. Yeah. Olive more?
It could be. Was it like a turtleneck thing? Yeah.
Okay, where was that?
That was in St. Louis at KDHX.
And so what's the deal? What's you do your own thing and you also play with Asleep at the Wheel. What else do you do outside of being a mom and wife to David?
I play with Asleep at the Wheel. I sing and I play rhythm guitar. And I also do my own thing, which has kind of evolved over the years. It started out as pretty country, and then it was kind of like country pop pub rock stuff. And then it morphed into jazz.
Yeah.
And then this next record that I've been working on is with my friends, Brothers Lazaroff from St. Louis. And they've taken some of the songs from the last record I did, Laziest Girl in Town, and kind of like remixed them, but also a lot of just like reimagining them and adding elements of like R&B and reggae and hip hop and noise music. Stuff that's a little out of my wheelhouse, but that I really think works. Like have you ever heard the Verve remixes?
Like
Verve put out a series of CDs.
Yeah, even like the Verve, like it's a bittersweet. Yeah, that's where I'm at. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
No, I know what you're talking about the label. Yeah. Jazz label.
They put out a series of remixes
in the '90s, early 2000s.
Early 2000s.
Yeah,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember. I think my ex-wife had one of them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I came across them. I interned at KUT.
Did they have like guys that, sorry to interrupt you, guys like famous,
like Danger DJs, Mouse kind of guys? Yeah, like famous, famous Thievery Corporation redoes, you know, Etta James, or I can't remember the specifics, but I just
It was
came
almost like that Moby album that was huge, Play.
Was that
just
a thing?
Just with songs you knew. It had a lot of, no. No, actually, it wasn't. You were interning at KUT.
Yeah, so I was interning at KUT and I came across a CD and it like totally blew me away. And for years I've had it in my mind that I wanted to do something like it. And in 2010, after The Laziest Girl in Town came out, I talked to David about like maybe we could work on some remixes, and then we just dropped it and then we picked it back up. And
like you guys?
Mm-hmm.
Like take what you did.
Yeah. And then
chop it up. Put a different beat behind it,
mm-hmm.
And there you go.
Yeah, pretty much. So we finally did it, like, just for fun. We did it in 2012, like,
and
here are these tracks, like, see what you know, what do you want to do with it? And he's got a band called Brothers Lazaroff, and they went into the studio and kind of reimagined some stuff, and they sent it back to me, and I was like, it's what I've always wanted to do. This is great. Let's do a whole record. So
are those songs out? No?
They are going to be out in mid-August.
And are they part of the new record, or
So the new project is an EP of these remixes with that Brothers Lazaroff did.
Okay.
And we did a Kickstarter campaign,
and that's
we raised the money for it. And
you did it?
That's done. And so now everything's being printed up and manufactured, and we'll have it soon, and we'll send it out. And it'll be released to the world in August, like late August.
How awesome is that to get to do a record that you don't have to actually go to the studio every day and do?
It was pretty cool. It was pretty awesome. And it was pretty much the speed that I can work at right now. I mean, I'm pretty maxed out. Like,
yeah.
I'm at capacity a lot of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you guys do it? Like, how do you guys handle that? And you play together?
We do. Yeah.
Just like, this seems crazy.
It does seem crazy. And it somehow strangely works.
You never just walk out of a room crying
Always. Of course. Yeah. Good. I mean, there are tears all the time. But, I mean, there's also really good stuff. So Dave and I play in Asleep at the Wheel together. Right. And we have for 8 years now. And then
when where you met? How did you guys meet?
We met at Jeannie's Little Longhorn.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What was going on?
Do you know Timmy Campbell? He's a drummer in town. Mm-mm. We went to see Dale Watson, I think, probably at Jeannie's. And I met Dave, and he, you know, Timmy's a drummer, Dave's a drummer. And, you know, that was the first time we met at a bar in Austin. And I kind of thought, like, for a while, I kind of thought he was kind of a jerk. Like,
because that's how it starts in the rom-coms.
Yeah, man. Always. Yeah. It was very rom-com. He was 40 years old and I was 23. And
I like this dude.
Yeah.
I like what he's doing.
He was like, you know, hitting on me and I was having none of it. And then he won me over with this ample charm.
Really?
Yeah, totally. I totally was like, no way. Actually, he came to see me play at the Triple Crown.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of looking to make a record.
In San Marcos?
And, mm-hmm.
Hang on.
Okay.
I'm scared that the AC is going to start.
Oh, no, go for it.
Oh, no. It wasn't. Sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
For some reason, I thought it was on. I guess I heard the AC. Oh, the fridge go off. All right. This is probably the most interesting part. So he went to go see you play at Triple Crown.
Yeah. And on the way home, he was like, oh, you know, I'd like to, because I was looking to make a record and he'd produce some records. So he said, I'd like to really talk to you about music. Can I give you a ride home? And I was like, yeah, sure. And we talked the whole way home. And I thought, like, you know, I remember thinking at the time, this is like really cool, because when you're a woman in music.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys who, you know, there's a lot of guys, and guys really want to, you know, maybe have sex with you. So right. I thought, like, oh man, this guy is so much older than me. There's no way that he's like going to try to go for it. He's like ancient, yeah, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm 40 years old. So he's done, right? And then the next day he called me and was like, hey, so I was thinking maybe we could hang out sometime. I was just like, on a date? I don't think so.
And that's a bummer too, because, you know, you're like, oh, I thought that this was a thing where you liked what I was doing.
My heart felt. Yeah. Like it fell. But then we did. But I didn't close the door, because you can't, you know, like, oh, you're interested in me. No, we can't. And I'm not interested in you. We can't be friends. Like, that's not
right.
A thing. So I said, well, we can hang out.
That's my game. Then I'd say, like, I don't know. We'll just be friends.
Oh, yeah. We'll just be friends. Foot in the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Foot in the door.
Foot in the door.
And then you just end up, somehow you just live together. And then just like, boom, one day it happens.
He was just a different guy than I thought he was. I mean, I thought that he was like slimy, right, music smarmy, business, yeah, smarmy dude who's like hitting on the young girl, which...
What were you doing then?
I was doing my own thing. I was playing...
But
around as much as I could, really, in town, so...
I've known your name for a long time.
Yeah. It's been around, I guess. I've been around... you know, but I've been kind of out of the game for like 5 years, you know, ever since we had
kids.
Making
babies.
Yeah.
And you're, you know.
In between like traveling and taking care of kids, like, do I want to go out and see
music
at night?
Do they have fun? Do they have fun?
They do.
They like music?
Yes.
It's all just kind of like their normal life. They don't realize that they get to.
They like traveling.
Hang out with Ray Benson all the time.
Yeah, I mean, they like, you know, he's Uncle Ray to them, and
so awesome.
And they're cool. They like, you know, they're cool in airports because they know the drill, and they like to go to hotels, and like they have their things that they like in hotels, you know. So
that's so cool.
It's fun. It's fun. They're good kids.
Yeah,
we got really lucky. They're not too particular about stuff.
Do you think that kind of they're raised like? Because I'm kind of like that, although I am particular about some things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think they've been doing it since they were babies.
I wonder if they'll grow up and do this kind of thing, because I traveled like that when I was a kid and all around. And
really?
Yeah, like no big whoop, just like, hey, get in the thing and here's an activity book and here's your Beatle 8-tracks and...
Yeah, man.
Action figures and, you know, go to town.
I feel like kids of musicians, they either like... go the musician route, or they go the totally opposite. Like I'm a doctor or an accountant or something. Like, which we're kind of hoping for because we're both musicians.
People used to tell my mom I was going to rebel and end up a lawyer.
Yeah.
Like some Republican lawyer somewhere.
Ooh. Hey, man. Hey, that'd be fine with me.
Could be worse.
Yeah. Mama's going to need some taken care of when she's older. You know.
Yeah.
The retirement fund is not huge.
They're not huge with musicians.
No.
So you're from the Northeast?
I'm originally from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh, right. Little Rock, Arkansas. But then you went to your early 20s to Columbia, Maryland.
Yes.
Okay, so you're born in Little Rock. How many siblings? What do you got going on?
I got a younger sister. She's 3 years younger.
Uh-huh.
And she's close. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally she played?
She does not. She is an artist. So there's actually no musicians in my family, but there are a lot of visual artists. So okay. She got that.
Does she live here?
She lives in Athens, Georgia.
Oh,
she
used to live place. Here.
It is
that's,
a good.
That's
it's
the
good.
Year of there.
It's yeah, but it's so far from yeah, here. You know, that's the.
Hey, tell her if she's ever at what's the place there that you play?
Is that the 40 Watt?
Yeah.
There?
When you're at the 40 Watt and the guy comes up and goes like, "Hey, there's dollar sushi around the corner." Tell her don't go eat that dollar sushi.
Ooh, did you have an experience with dollar sushi
Me
in Athens,
and three
Georgia?
Three other guys. Together had an experience.
Oh.
Kind of going off at different times.
Were you on the road and then ate dollar sushi in Athens, Georgia?
That's another thing. Oh, tell her also not to be high when she gets to the
So you ate a lot of dollar sushi.
Well, I think I got the least sick.
Oh my, was it everyone in the band who was sick?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And it was just kind of after the gig. We were at another club hanging out, and I saw one of the guys throwing up, and I was like, oh, cool, man, rock and roll.
And then you're like, oh, I don't feel so good here. Wait a second. Oh, no.
Sorry, so she lives in Athens, and you're what did your parents do?
They are retired now. My dad was an architect.
Okay.
And my mom was in sales. So, well, she was a buyer for a department store for a long time, for Dillard's.
Oh, yeah. You don't have a Southern accent.
No, I got rid of that when I moved up to Maryland.
How did you do that? Consciously?
No, it was like survival. I mean, I moved up to Maryland from Arkansas.
Hey, man, it's me. I'm from Arkansas.
Well, I mean, and people were like, you know, I remember one kid was like, you have Sprite in Arkansas? Like, I had said something about Sprite.
What year was this?
It was 1989 or something. Mm. Yeah. I told one kid once that the first time I'd ever owned shoes was when I moved up to Maryland. Because we didn't need them, and he believed me. Like, you know, and I lived in Little Rock, so there's
like
nothing country about it. Yeah.
No, it's you got Juanita's?
Yeah, Juanita's. We used to go eat quesadillas. That's the first place I ever ate quesadillas.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And then I saw some punk shows there when I was older when I go back.
Okay, so your parents stayed there. You moved to Maryland for what, school?
No. My parents, we moved up to the East Coast, like, 1989.
Okay.
Because my dad needed to find another job, basically. He was an architect, and he was doing stuff that was all dependent on Texas.
He built a crooked building, and they ran him out of
town. No, it was all dependent on Texas oil money, and there was there was a bust back then,
right?
So
yeah,
he had to find, like, another job. So he moved up to the East Coast, which was great.
Yeah.
You know?
How did you like Maryland? You become a crab fan?
Yeah. Well, everyone likes crabs.
I love them.
Yeah. Crabs are pretty great.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a really, really, like, in a planned community called Columbia, Maryland. You may know of it if you've been around
there. I know
the
name.
It was like the ultimate suburb. Like, everything was mapped out ahead of time. There was a 20-year plan. So, like,
the Woodlands. I lived there.
Is that what the Woodlands is like?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like where all the trees are equally spaced apart. And
well, it was just a 20-year plan.
Yeah, yeah. In Columbia, it was like all the houses looked the same except, like, the house next, because you would go to, like, a model home park.
Right.
And you would pick out your house.
Yeah.
But then they might position it differently.
Right,
you know, so, like, that house right there is the same as ours, except they moved, you know.
Right.
They moved it a little bit.
Or you can kind of, like, I'd rather have the garage on this side.
Yeah,
or give me a sliding glass. That's what my mom did. Like, we had a house, we looked at a thing, and she was like, I like this, and I like the skylights of this house with the back sliding glass door for my thing in this.
Kind of like customizing a car or something. And I want the carpet to be this color, so that was... That was my upbringing. So it was kind of like, I don't know, it was just really highly educated. Like, 90% of the adults have bachelor degrees and 50% have advanced degrees. So just this, like, weird suburban
bubble. What was your mom's thing?
She was a buyer down in Arkansas, and then she got into,
Dillard's.
Like, sales.
Okay,
yeah.
And then up there, would she just
she
sales?
Did sales, like, sales rep for a paper products company.
All right.
So, yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's like an office.
No, it was actually like, not like paper like you would print, but like cards and
oh yeah,
like I have like a ton of journals still because she would just bring home all these samples.
Oh, that's
and I
cool.
like journals and stuff like that. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, we lived up there and then I went to school up there, but by the time I graduated college, I was just like, I'm not gonna live here.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to school a lot of places. I started in New York City at Barnard, okay. And I just couldn't do the city. So then I went back to Maryland.
Okay.
Then I went to Spain for a year, and then I came back and graduated from Maryland. So,
what took you to Spain?
The desire to run away from my problems, and the desire just to get away.
What problems did you have?
I was just kind of normal, early, you know.
Boy problems?
I don't know, not being really satisfied. I really didn't like living up there at all. It's a really tough place to live, like the Baltimore, Washington area. People spend a lot of time in their cars, and they're not very nice. And culturally, it's kind of strangely dead. I don't know. Just, I wasn't digging it. And I loved Spain. Spain was great.
Yeah.
And I, España. Yeah. Yeah.
España.
España. It was great.
Do you speak Spanish?
Kind of, but I speak Spanish, so I have a lisp. So people here will like make fun of, like, if I speak Spanish to people, I use like, it's like speaking British English, you know? So instead of saying like for car, I'll say like coche, which kind of means coach, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm Cuban and Spanish is my first language, but I speak it like a Cuban. So I guess I sound like I'm from like Arkansas.
Oh, really? Is that like that? Is that the same thing?
Well, I guess it kind of like, every Spanish, outside of Spain, mm-hmm. all the Latin American countries think they're the next, like it's us in Spain.
Yeah, like, right? Oh, yeah, like we speak the proper Spanish.
And like, even someone will be to say something to my grandma, like, oh, you know, you Mexican? She'll be like, no, I'm Cuban.
It's like, wow. Are you
Puerto Rican? No. You know what I mean? Like, everything, they get so offended. But I think judging from hearing everyone speak Spanish, the Cubans and Puerto Ricans are kind of like trashy, kind of.
Really?
Hey, ¿cómo anda? They don't even pronounce their R's or anything, man.
That's actually very much like where I lived. I lived in Andalusia, which is like southern Spain. And there they say like, they just slur everything. They don't like speak their consonants or anything. So it'd be like, hola, ¿qué pasa? Like, you know, ¿cómo está? Like nothing,
right?
Like where'd those continents go?
Yeah.
So yeah,
I like. Wow. So what did you do when you were out there? You went to school?
Yeah, I just went to school and I drank a lot. I was
everyone that does that thing just drinks wine all the time.
Yeah, it wasn't really just wine. It was just a lot. I actually, when I came back, I stopped drinking after I went to Spain for a year because
you really.
It was, yeah, man.
Did you run, I mean, what was the deal? Did you, like, were you single? Were you running around meeting guys? And
oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I might have.
Were you playing?
No. I didn't even consider music as like a.
But you played?
You know, I played in a band in high school.
But you knew an instrument?
No.
No?
No.
Oh,
no,
so
no,
it came
no,
late?
No. Yeah, I came really
what
late.
What were you doing? Like, what were you going to be?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I was going to be like a
person who went
like,
to
first I was going to be like a computer programmer maybe, and then it kind of fried my brain, and then I was going to be a teacher maybe. Then I was going to be an anthropologist. And
what does an anthropologist do?
I don't know.
Okay, so go.
I have a degree in it, but you know, you study people. But as far as like what you actually do.
This is anthropology.
This is very anthropological what you're doing. I mean, I think that like if you're an anthropologist, if you're not out like doing field work,
right.
I think the sense that I got is like you are working for like a marketing company trying to figure out how to sell things to
okay.
people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Oh, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. I just didn't. So, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but musician was definitely not on the list because like. I didn't grow up around musicians, and I didn't have any concept that it was like any
the
kind
of
viable.
Like your parents didn't know anybody there that was like, oh, this is the guitar player, Steve.
If you did hear about musicians, they were like, oh, so-and-so's dad's a classical violinist,
right,
and he plays
course.
With the symphony,
yeah.
Which was not going to happen for me. So it wasn't until I like got out of college, had a job for a year as a social worker, and then I thought like,
What this aspect?
This fucking sucks.
Of social work.
I
was
worked.
It totally dark.
Kind of. I worked at a suicide prevention line. It was a little dark.
I'm just like, wow, that's super dark.
It was, and I did, I mean, it wasn't just suicide prevention. There was a lot of like crisis stuff that came in.
I don't mean to laugh. I'm just like, wow, I've really tapped into something here.
Yeah.
I was patting myself on the back.
It was tough. And I was like, you know, like this 21-year-old kid who'd grown up in this like pretty protected suburban bubble, and like walking in and you know, one of the things with Child Protective Services after hours intake, so you would hear about these horrible, you know, horrible things happening to kids. And the one was homelessness prevention. That was kind of my thing. So people like, I am gonna lose my place, or I've been living in a hotel for, you know, a month, and I need to get, I mean, there's a lot of people who like live in hotels. I mean, there's,
yeah, those weekly hotels.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a whole underground housing scene in this country. So, I mean, but there were also like regulars who would call in, like,
wait, so people call you and be like, I'm about to lose. And what would you like? What?
Like,
as
I'm about
a 22-year-old and all, yeah, your, I mean, what do you like in the suburbs? Yeah. Like, well, maybe you should just go spend a year in Spain.
Yeah. You know, it'd be really great. I mean, you just try to listen and be empathetic. And if right. they really sound like they're going to try to close a deal, you call the cops. And
so what, I mean, but what do you say? Like, someone's like, dude, I'm at the end of my rope. I don't know what else to do.
I mean, you try to say like, you know, this is just a moment in time. Like you know, you will feel differently in the future, you know, like, but try to just talk to them and listen and give them places to go. Like, well, maybe you need to go talk to someone, you know, can you hang on to this? I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea what I was doing. I was 22.
When you went home every day, like, what was that? I mean,
I think it
super intense?
I think the key to being a good social worker is being able to leave it. You know what I mean? Being able to like walk back into your life and it not follow you.
Right.
But it just, I mean, there were some things that
I don't know.
Were so intense.
Yeah. I mean, I realize it's a job, but it's difficult for me to get my job and your job. They're so goofy.
Yeah.
That it's hard to imagine. So you say like, okay, I might have hit a wrong chord during Dancing Queen the other night at you know, Cedar Street or something, but like to be like, fuck, I wonder if that guy's gonna kill himself.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy.
I mean, there's
but
no way I could. I mean, I guess you do.
Yeah,
like you're like a doctor and someone's bleeding. You don't go like, oh my god, you're bleeding. You go like, oh, how can I fix this?
But honestly, like the majority of the calls that you get are not people in that situation.
Right.
Like
right
the majority, you get a lot of like regulars, like shut-ins, who just call to talk to someone. You know, like people who don't leave their house and don't really have any friends. And so they'll just call to talk. And like, you just talk to them for a little bit. Or you have someone who's schizophrenic and who calls and just is in the middle of a delusion and just wants to like talk. I mean, but we'll call like every day or two or three times a day.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that was the majority of what you were dealing with, which is in some ways like, just as difficult, you know, because it's pretty like heart-wrenching to think of someone who has no one else and who's just like hanging out in their house alone.
Was this before,
calling the
like,
hotline,
chat rooms and stuff like that? I wonder if those guys can get along and do that kind, you know, of like instant messaging weird thing.
A lot of older people, like I would have been surprised if they had computers, but it was, I mean, this was like 95 96.
Oh no,
so
they weren't on there.
Yeah, just on the cusp of all that. So yeah, it was tough. And so after a year, I just felt kind of beat up.
Yeah.
And I also felt beat up by like living in this place where no one really
this
seemed
in
happy.
Maryland?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like right outside of DC.
Yeah.
So I was like, my boyfriend and I at the time were like, we're going to move to Austin and be musicians. And that was our whole plan. Like,
so you just up and moved?
Yeah, pretty much. We came down here
and
visited.
Okay.
And saw like, oh, there's Austin Music Network. Like there's a music video station on the TV of like local artists. What? And there's music everywhere. And and then we moved down together. So.
And what year was that? 97?
No. So that Wait, I graduated. No. Sorry. I graduated college in 99. So this was like 2000, I think. Yeah, or 2001. I can never remember.
That's okay.
I have no idea how long I've been here.
So what were you into musically when you moved down here?
Total country music. Like total old school Loretta Lynn, George Jones, Patsy Cline.
This is a good place for that.
Yeah, it was. And it really was. Nurturing. I mean, the root scene is kind of transformed, I guess, in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
But when I moved down, it was like, it was serious business. Yeah, totally. And like by extension, I mean, Dale Watson, you know? And Dale. Yeah, he's awesome.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's incredible.
You know, I've asked him to be on this show, but I think every time it's just awkward.
Really?
Uh-huh. One time he was wearing a tuxedo and it was like Sunday at like 5.
Yeah.
In the afternoon.
And he was wearing a tuxedo Sunday at 5? Was this...
And I said, hey, Dale, man, I'm Johnny. I don't know if you remember me or whatever. And he's like, what? And I'm like, I have this podcast where I talk to people. I'd love to have you on it. And he goes, oh, yeah. And I give him a card and then I go, why are you wearing a tuxedo? But like with that tone, like, what's this?
Yeah.
This fucking get up. Dale Watson. And then I was on a podcast with them, someone else's.
Is there another, like a local podcast?
There's a lot of them, yeah. It's Charlie Hodge.
I don't know.
It's not normally musicians.
Okay.
I mean, Dale's pretty funny. Do you know him? You know,
I do. Obviously, yeah.
I don't know him, but I mean, on that show, he was funny as shit.
Yeah, he's a totally funny dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more of a comedian's thing, and I think they get the goofy kind of musicians.
To come in and like cool do the thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I don't know. I bet he'd come in and talk to you. Maybe you should need to go to him and be like, hey, can I come to your bus sometime?
I should probably bring my thing everywhere I go, but I don't.
Oh.
Because then I think I'm going to lose it. A little handheld guy.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. Do you? Do you want to do that? I mean, because you might break it or like that would be my thing. I would definitely lose this thing.
I'm at a Skyrocket gig in Houston a little over a year ago. Mm-hmm. And we're playing some party for something. I can't remember what it was for, but they're like, oh, yeah, the cast of the Toxic Avenger musical is coming in.
Hello.
That's going to Broadway. Mm-hmm. Constantine from, you watch American Idol?
No.
Oh.
Sorry.
Constantine from like 2005. Taylor Hicksier.
Okay,
he was one of the long hairs. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he came, sang with Skyrocket.
And you could have like done a thing right there.
I said, will you do this thing I just started doing? And he said, yeah. And I said, cool. And he gave me his phone number and everything. And then he said, I can do it now. And I was like, I don't have my thing, bro.
Maybe you should bring your thing.
Yep, I should. Let's go back to you.
Okay, anyway.
You come to Austin. What did your boyfriend play?
Steel. And he actually still lives here. He plays with Jesse Dayton.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Jesse's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. His name is Nathan Fleming. He's a great steel player.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I love Jesse Dayton.
Yeah.
I do.
Talk about, he's a funny guy.
He's like a totally hilarious dude. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he seems to be doing like lots of zombie movies lately. I follow him on Instagram.
That's his thing.
Yeah.
I see him every once in a while out and we talk about doing this. He's another guy that's a big WTF guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he got this part. was at a party once and he got everyone talking about... the Gallagher interview with Mark Maron.
Oh, like, yeah, the one where you get so pissed
who's
off.
Who's the asshole?
Yeah.
And it really is funny because like the whole room was really divided.
Between people like Mark Maron. Yeah. Well,
I don't see anyone couldn't see that Gallagher's just a total asshole.
I mean, I felt like they were like a positive feedback asshole loop. Like, because Mark Maron did go after him a little bit. And then Gallagher was a total, why don't I have my own podcast? Like that.
Just
kind of
that
thing
whole
on.
Thing drove me nuts.
Yeah, that was
crazy. And just
crazy.
Anybody that talks like that would make... I immediately think they're in the wrong. So so when you came here, you started playing out as yourself, Elizabeth McQueen?
Yeah, yeah.
And what were you playing?
You know, like the hole in the wall, a lot of hole in the wall. Egos?
That's where I remember seeing your name all the time.
Yeah, I played at the hole in the wall a lot. And Egos and, I mean, yeah, I'd wanted to play the Continental Club really badly.
Yeah.
But like that didn't happen till later. So I just played like a million gigs. I haven't played there in... a long time, but I have played there like in the last couple of years. Yeah. So yeah. I just played like a million gigs. Like I had like an anywhere with electricity kind of like ethos.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you like, had, well, how big was your band? You played guitar and sang.
Mm-hmm.
So your boyfriend usually, was playing this.
No, we broke up. I have some friends who have a theory that, like, you know, a lot of couples move to Austin, and the further away you move from, the quicker you'll break up. Like the ratio, it's like an inverse
that's
proportion.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So it was pretty.
How do we get numbers on that?
I don't know. We're gonna have to start asking.
I
think it's probably true, right? Like, I don't know. For me, it was.
I moved here from Houston.
Did you move here with someone?
Yeah, kind of.
And that's not very far, so you were probably together for a while here.
Year and a half.
Yeah, see? There you go.
Okay, how long were you guys together? Oh, the further away.
Yeah, like, so the further away, the shorter. Yeah, so the further away. So you moved from Houston only a couple hours, so you were together for a year and a half. We were only together. We had been together for a long time before we moved here, but we were only together for a couple months after we got here.
And you stayed friends?
After a time, yeah.
It takes a while.
Yeah, totally.
So how long did you go around playing before you got in? In
Asleep at the Wheel?
In Asleep at the Wheel 5 years ago?
8 years ago.
8 years ago.
8 years ago, yeah.
So 2005 you started playing. Oh, yeah, I highlighted that. You know what? I need a new highlighter. I need to get a different one because I think mine's too thin. I'm not enjoying
you
those
do.
Thin lines.
Oh, the thin is not good. You've got to be able to cover all of
thick
the
one. Yeah.
All of the. What's up with the thin highlighter?
I thought it was. It's a new kind, and I'm trying to keep up with the kids. I don't want to.
The kids and their thin highlighters.
I don't want to be in here with residual kid with a big fat highlighter.
People looking at you going, "Okay, Grandpa, nice highlighter."
So you played around, and how did you? Let's go to how did you get the gig with Asleep at the Wheel? Was it through David?
Pretty much. I mean, I actually don't really understand, like, why Ray did it. I mean, Dave and I had been married for a year, so I'd been around the band for a couple years. And Hayden Viterra was playing fiddle with them. Mm-hmm. And when he left the band, Dave said, you know, "Do you mind if I, like, throw your name in the hat?" And I was like, "Well, sure, but there's... like, absolutely no way."
There's, like, a lot of chords in those songs, too.
Yeah, and there's absolutely... My thought was, like, there's absolutely no way that, like, Ray is going to hire your wife. Because that's crazy. Like, no, you don't do that, right? Like, but I had sung with them a couple times, and, like, musically it was a good fit. Mm-hmm. So then I got a call. I was actually on tour with my own band, like, out in New Mexico. And Dave called, and he said, like... "Okay, so they're considering you to, like, play with the band." And I was like, "Okay." So he said, "So you have to decide, like, if you would say yes, if they offered it to you." And I was I had just bought a 15-passenger van, and I was just going to try to, like,
make my
own push.
Wow. Were you working a day job or anything? Did you just
I had quit my day job, like, 9 months earlier. So I had worked at UT for a long time as a secretary. For a while I was like, I'm not a musician. If someone looks at my resume, they're going to see secretary, or administrative assistant. So then they offered me the gig, and I was like, hell yeah. Because my only goal in life really ever had been to, like, not have to have another job and make my living as a musician.
Yeah.
And it was like...
That's a good feeling, isn't it?
It was pretty great. It was... astounding. I wasn't really sure that it would ever happen, you know, because doing it on my own, I mean, it seemed like I would get a little traction here and a little traction there, but sometimes you just feel like when you're doing your own thing, like, you're just hemorrhaging money. Like, if you go out on the road, it's just like you're just giving it all to other people and there's nothing left. So
right, especially when you're the person.
Well, yeah, when,
like,
you're the guy.
Elizabeth McQueen situation or Johnny Gowdy situation.
Yeah, when you're and like, the way that I saw it was, this might be my only opportunity ever to be, like, a side guy, because I'm not like a hotshot player.
Yeah, me
neither. I'm a singer.
Right.
So singers have to kind of do their own thing. They have to create their own thing. Where players can, like,
got to do what
hook up with
doing.
A band.
Yeah,
and yeah, I was like, man, I get to be in a gig where someone else does all the work.
Yeah.
And I just show up and play.
Yeah.
Which I've been, like, I was envious of side guys for years before that. Like, you just have to show up and play.
It's not like also, like, you got in some band that's, like, struggling to make things happen. It's
oh,
like you
yeah.
got in an extremely established
Yes.
You know, a band that has a career as that band.
Yes.
With a bus and a lot of things and Grammy nominations and If Willie Needs People.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a real fucking thing. It's not like...
Yeah, I felt totally like, whoa, I feel really lucky right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ray's a nice guy, huh?
He is.
I met him. We played a thing one time.
You play a thing? Like a private party kind of thing?
Someone's birthday, and then a bunch of people got on stage and played. It was like me and Casey McPherson and him and Bob Schneider was playing drums. Bob Schneider was playing drums?
Is he a drummer?
He's a really good drummer.
Really?
Yeah.
I even listened to him.
I want to play on something of mine someday.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
Yeah, you know who else is amazing? Amazing drummer?
Who?
Charlie Sexton.
No. What?
Well, everything he does.
Is he one of those guys who can just do, he can just do it? Like, yeah. Pick it up and play it, yeah. Kind of game.
Yeah, nice. And also incredibly funny.
Really? I don't really know him.
See?
So, yeah, I've...
So, I played a thing and he was nice.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. And he's like, I mean, I don't really know if I've ever met anyone who works harder than that dude.
Yeah, he's always doing stuff.
It's crazy. It's like, talk about, like he gets up and he's... You get up and he's on the phone and you go to bed and he's on the, you know, like that kind of thing. And he's always got schemes and plans and,
Yeah. So. Just had this flash in my mind, like when you wake up and he's on the phone, he's like, no, man, Batman didn't change his outfit. Like that would be me in the morning. You know what I mean? Talking to like Todd Wolfson.
Right. Like, yeah, no, it's been really nice actually. And then, you know, when Dave and I decided to have kids, it was like, I basically went to them and said, well, I want to stay on the road. Like,
did you decide you wanted to have kids and then you had kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't like you're all of a sudden going to have kids and you're like, okay, well, I guess we'll decide to do this.
No. Yeah. We were lucky enough to be able to make the choice. Like, okay, I think now would be a good time to have kids. And we kept on putting it off. I mean, we were married for 5 years before we even started trying because... We were on the road together having a good time, living the life of an extended adolescence. Like, but
and
finally,
does that evaporate? Because I don't have kids, Elizabeth, and
I think, do you want kids?
No, I'm scared it'll take away my life of extended adolescence.
It will. I could, like, that evaporates immediately.
It just dries up. And
it
then
just totally
serious
dries
stuff
up.
And people have to be kept alive on a constant basis.
Yes. Yes. That's you have basically so boiled intense. It down to the very
Well, that's what I mean. You can see how that would scare somebody who's incredibly immature.
You know, it is like it's a huge sacrifice, and I think like I kind of felt that when I was pregnant, and then by the time you have the kid, you're like over the fact that you can't smoke pot anymore. You know what I mean? It's
right.
Oh, okay, I got a kid, and then you know Dave kind of figured it out after the kid was born, and it's a huge sacrifice. It's like a totally different life, but it's totally.
You mean he figured it out? Like, okay, this is the thing.
Like this is
Oh, okay.
you don't get the late nights and the like laying in bed till noon anymore. There's none of that. But there's also this like incomparable experience.
Of course.
Yeah, it's great.
You wouldn't have had a second one.
Oh yeah.
You wouldn't have had an encore.
I was always gonna have more than one kid. I want more.
Really?
But Dave is 52, so I don't think we're gonna have any more. But I want more.
Yeah.
I like it. I like being a mom.
That's good.
Yeah.
It agrees with you. So you went and you told him you wanted to have kids, and Ray Benson was like,
everyone was...
We want to have children, Godfather.
Well,
consummate. And he's like on this layer.
It was more like I was like, okay, so I'm pregnant.
Yeah, oh, okay.
And
I don't want to stop
wanted,
doing
and
this.
I want to come back after we
All
have
right.
the baby. And he was like,
all right.
I don't know about that. Like, everyone was like, yeah, right. But I think he had like a let's wait and see approach, which we all did.
Sure.
But Dave and I, with the first one, we're like, we are doing this.
We're
and we are going to get a
baby.
Sprinter van and we are going to bring this baby on the road.
I like that. So you get a separate space so that you're not, your family unit can maintain its own privacy.
Yeah. You don't want to bring a baby on the bus.
The bass player from Asleep at the Wheel, like. You know,
hating your
up.
Guts.
Yeah.
Like totally hating
yeah,
your
yeah,
guts.
Yeah. Everyone would hate you.
Everyone would hate us. Like,
and
we would hate them. I mean, you know, it's,
of course.
It's, there's
so
no
now,
way.
God, what a great dream. But it's a dream. And plus, sprinters are so nice.
They are nice. And we got a really good deal on one, too, because they're so expensive.
Yeah.
We got a used one.
So. Did you get Ian Moore's?
No, we got one down in like around San Marcos with some little old lady had only driven it ever to like Hot Springs, Arkansas or something. So it had like 30,000 miles and, but it wasn't too nice on the inside because we've totally destroyed it with two kids on the road. Yeah. So it's been nice, you know, I mean.
And you share the drive. It's okay to do the driving?
You know, Dave does most of the driving. Like him and the nanny will often switch off because
I'm mostly a nanny with you too?
Kid duty. It depends. Usually for like long trips, we have to bring a nanny because otherwise you're trying to coordinate babysitters in every town.
That's
and
cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
Like a rock star.
I don't know, man.
You are, man. Seriously. I'm so glad I met you. This is, I don't know how organized this is as an interview, but it's an awesome, it's been a nice conversation so far.
Thanks. Yeah,
it's
I
not
feel
over.
Like,
I'm
okay,
just saying so
okay.
far.
Well, yeah, I feel like when I go home and think about this interview, I'll be like, I just rambled through that interview.
I know, but that's okay. good. That's it's how okay. I, you know what? That's how I feel when I leave them too. When I leave other people's.
Oh, really?
When I'm being interviewed, I always leave going like, God, I'm stupid. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's always the like, you know, the next day rundown when you go in your mind, and I should have said this.
Well, you know, I just had a guy, I can't mention his name because it's not fair, but I just had a guy email me 2 days ago and say, hey, that I don't want it to come out.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's not, well, he didn't talk shit about anyone or anything. He just kind of was like, I feel real weird about it.
Huh. Yeah, well. You got to respect him.
Yeah.
Yeah. For saying something.
That's only happened a couple times.
That's better than you like putting it out and then him hating your guts.
Sure.
Because you like, oh, I didn't like that thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I totally understand that.
Yeah. Huh.
I wrote him back. Thanks a lot, asshole. No, I'm just kidding. Never getting back
I
that
had
hour
a schedule.
And a half.
Yeah. Come on.
So let's talk about your albums.
Yes.
When did you put out your first solo album?
I think I put out the first one in 2002.
Okay.
I think,
that was
yeah.
shortly after arriving here.
Yes.
I have a thing in here where it talks about it. I like this quote from Robbie Robertson, that life on the road can be a goddamn impossible way of life.
It's true. You know it. It's like totally.
I do know it. That's
totally
exactly.
Crazy.
It can be.
Yeah. And it, I think like, no matter what you do, you go out on the road and it's one, you know, even with kids, it's like we stay in hotels and we don't have to pick up after each other. And, you know, we're kind of like beholden to no one but the gig.
Yeah.
And then you get home and it's like, oh, I've got to do the dishes, man. I've got to like take care of all this day-to-day stuff. And I don't know. I don't like it.
That, that's always a weird transition.
Yeah, that transition.
How long do you guys go out for?
I don't know, like most weekends. And then every once in a while we'll go out for a couple weeks. And then in the summer we'll usually go out for between like 3 and 6 weeks. So
it's a consistent job.
It is
that you
consistent.
Stay, you don't have to get other jobs.
Mm-mm.
To do
it's
it.
Every
and
weekend.
You have a lot of time to spend with your kids.
Yeah, totally.
That's a really great thing. That's something
you
will never regret this.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean?
Like when we're home, we're basically two stay-at-home parents.
Yeah.
And when we're on the road, it's kind of nuts, but we're all together. So that's good. Yeah.
That's cool. Okay, I think I found the thing where it says, okay, your first record was the Fresh Up Club.
Yes.
And that was a country album.
Yes.
And what happened?
we went into the studio. And
Okay. You made the album. It came out kind of like did people like it? Did
yeah,
you sell
people did like it.
A number of records? You were going to like New Mexico, so you were.
Yeah, I mean, we never sold like a substantial amount of stuff. I've always put out stuff on my own, so. Selling lots of records, not a whole lot, but it did get some like good, you know, good reviews and got played on the radio on
seriously
around
you've
here.
Never met anyone that sold less records than me.
Well,
that you wouldn't think didn't. Like people like you're like, I've only sold this many records. You're like, what, seriously? You're like, yeah, dude, like nobody buys my shit. There's like three dudes talking about it a lot.
Oh yeah,
so
well,
it seems like a whirlwind of stuff.
Yeah, that was my thing. Like I would get, you know, played on the radio and like I would get, you know, write-ups and stuff, but as far as people actually buying the records,
well, you started putting out records right at the end of people
buying
records that they liked.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean now it's, you know, between, so you could actually sell records back in 2002 and in 2004 when I put out or five
second
when
one.
I put out the next record,
yeah, which
was 2005 called, which was
happy
called
doing
happy
doing
what we're doing,
yeah,
which was my tribute to pub rock, which is like the scene that Elvis Costello and Nick Lowe came out of.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. I just heard about this.
Yeah, it's it was like the same thing that I was doing. It was just roots rock.
What's a pub? And bars. What do you mean, like Rockpile?
Yeah, like Rockpile kind of came out of the scene where.
Who else? Because I don't. I just started hearing about. I think it might have been on that Nick Lowe interview with.
Yeah.
It might have been because I listened to a whole lot of Nick Lowe's interviews during that last tour.
Right. He doesn't speak highly of pub rock, actually.
No.
Like, he kind of says, like, if it's. It was super earnest, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, had I known that Nick Lowe didn't like pub rock, I might not have made that record. Because I am a Nick Lowe freak.
I had
freak.
Scottish managers that were older than me, and they would always use that as a reference, but I was always so scared of the verbal berating I would get when I would ask a question.
Oh, no!
So I just never asked what it was. I just assumed it was bad, and as long as we weren't doing it, I was fine.
Oh, yeah. I never knew that it was like a derogatory term at all. I just knew that like the guys that I loved
out of it. New wave guys hated it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. But like.
Or punk guys.
Yeah. Punk guys and new wave guys. Although like, you know, Stiff Records in a way kind of grew out of that scene, which was, you know.
What do you listen? What kind of music do you listen to?
I listen to a lot of stuff. It kind of depends. Yeah.
Like what?
Well, my go-to like bands that I will never get tired of are The Band.
Okay.
And Elvis Costello.
Okay.
So, like, if I could only, you know, I'd choose Get Happy and, like, The Band, probably.
Yeah.
Or music from Big Pink.
Sorry. Okay, go back.
So, yeah. So, those are my guys. But I listen to, lately I've been listening to a lot of Flaming Lips, actually.
What Flaming Lips?
Yoshimi Flaming
Lips. Okay, yeah. The Happy, you know, not this new death.
Wait, I was actually at the show, the South by Southwest show.
Oh,
when
When
they debuted The Terror, and it was
terrifying. Did you take your kids?
No.
Did you take them to shows?
You know,
if you would have gone to Paul McCartney and it wasn't $300 to take a 2-year-old to see Paul McCartney, would you have taken them?
No, we haven't gotten into like taking them to adult music yet. Like we take them to kids shows sometimes, and they come to Wheel shows. But
what kid shows? Was Sarah Hickman or something?
Oh, like Neil Kasanoff.
Oh yeah,
him. He's so good.
Sure, he's been on the show.
Yeah, he's
Neil's like, on the bus.
Yeah, he's like totally
slamming hit.
Ride My Giraffe is like a super hit in our house. And Joe McDermott.
Yeah.
He's, you know.
I used to go see Joe McDermott when he was in a band.
Oh, really?
I did shows with him. Grains of Faith.
Sweet. Yeah.
Martha. They had a song called Martha that was great.
He's like the genius. I think he's a genius of the kids' music stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah. He has a song, Baby Kangaroo. It's a cappella, and it's like. By the end of it, we just play it just to listen to it and be in awe of like what he did.
Have you done it yet? Have you done a kids thing? Have you?
You've
written like a straight up kids song?
I was on a kids record, a group of called Sweet Songs, and it was a group of women and moms who did songs for kids. And my friend Monica Cravata put it out, and so I did write a song called "The Baby Got Stuck in the Bumbo." Which was a song that we just used to sing to Liesl, like, when she was a kid. Because do you know what a bumbo is?
No.
If you were a parent, you would know. It's like this molded... Oh, sorry. It's this, like, molded rubber chair, and you stick your kid in there before they can sit up on their own.
Okay.
And so then... So, like, you can put them down and stuff.
Okay.
But when you try to take them out, their little chubby baby legs always get stuck. So you pick them up, and then the chair comes with them. So, yeah. But I haven't really done, like, a lot of kids' music, per se. Yeah.
You seem like there's a vibe about you. I mean, I don't know you well enough yet.
It's okay.
But you seem like someone that would, if you wrote a kid's song, it would be really good.
Well,
and it'd be fun. It wouldn't be, it would be silly, but not stupid.
Well, you know what? I have to say, I have played a fair number of shows just in the last year that were like at a good kid time. So there were a lot of kids there. Like we did a show at the Carousel with the Firebrands, which is my old band. And we play like once or twice a year. We played at the Carousel at like 6:30 so that people could bring their kids.
Why are kids at the Carousel Lounge?
Because
They bring their own bottles.
I used to, actually, that's where I played a lot when I first started playing.
I had a
residency at the Carousel like for forever and ever and ever. And so a lot of people that used to come to those shows who would like to maybe see the band again, like they have kids and... They might not want to pay $75 for a babysitter just to come and see a show. But if they can bring their kids, then it's good. And kids are by far like the best audience like of anyone ever. They're not afraid to dance. They're not afraid to show enthusiasm. You know,
we do these shows like at Steiner Ranch and stuff with Skyrocket and people bring their kids. But like I get fucking bummed when someone brings a kid to my own show.
Oh, like to your like
bummed.
Real? Why?
Ruins my whole thing.
Like even if the
kills
kid
kills my vibe.
Even if the kid is cool.
Even if the kid's cool, there's this lady in Houston. Her kid's like a huge fan of mine, but like I don't even know why they'd let this kid listen to my music. He's only like 10. So
what bums you out?
Talk
about
embaiting and stuff on stage and like all this kind of stuff. It's like that's kind of like what I. That's kind of like when I do a solo show. Part of my thing is being able to freely say things that no one's ever heard from a musician on stage, and then this totally kills my thing because I'm not going to do that. And then like,
do you edit yourself? Like with the, you do edit yourself when the kid's around.
Yeah, but then stuff starts slipping out,
and then that
becomes part of the show. Yeah,
right. Yeah, well, I can see that. I can.
It's a very
totally
delicate balance.
Yeah, I had never thought about that, about like it actually bumming someone out.
I really hope that lady who brings her kid to the shows. Well, look, if she's listening, she's got to know. Because I think one time I was like, God, why do you bring him?
Like, you actually like, said to her, like...
you. Like, that doesn't work.
It bums me out. I feel like I can't tell my masturbation joke.
Yeah. They're not even jokes. They're just, like, confessions. But it is funny in the context. So you put out those albums. The second album you put out, people weren't buying...
People, I mean, the second album I put out right when I joined Asleep at the Wheel. So I had like a plan of like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to tour and I'm going to like become, I'm going to do this next thing, like, and reach the next level of my career or whatever. Yeah. And then I got the gig with the Wheel and it was like, bloop, maybe not. So then, and a couple of years after I was in the Wheel, actually after I'd had Liesl, so in 2008, I started working on a new record that was more influenced by what I was kind of singing with the Wheel. Cause when I joined the Wheel, like I was like, oh shit, I have to learn how to sing, like actually sing differently and sing, you know, kind of like really sing. And I have to learn all these guitar chords. Like you said, like, there's a lot of guitar chords.
They're like minor ninths and shit like that.
Yeah, there's a ton of shit.
I don't know. I just see his hand moving around a lot in these.
Yeah, there's a ton of chords.
That doesn't look like G.
And I would, if it were my thing, I would have only ever learned like 1, 4, 5, maybe minor 2. You know, that's like where I was at. So after, you know, so I would just listen to like Ella Fitzgerald and Betty Carter and Nina Simone and try to sing like them. And then after a couple of years of doing that, I was like, oh, I want to make a record like them.
Yeah.
So that's why I did The Lazy.
They sing different
down.
Notes than in pop melodies and in rock melodies and country melodies. These they go to these, just like the chords, they go to these weird, you can move.
Yeah, yeah. The improvisation part of it is really great. And the song structure is more complex. And I wanted to do a record like they did it. So we went into the studio and we were all in the same room basically, except for me. And I said to the guy, like, and it was all, okay, this is the take. We're going to do like 4 takes and whatever take is best, we're going to keep, and we're not going to go back and fix things. So like, because the saxophone is in the same room with the drums, so there's going to be bleed. So you can't actually go back and fix it.
Nope.
And that was
and so did you
really
sing
fun.
At the same time?
I did, but I was in the booth, scratching. And I got to do re-sing. Scratch vocals. Okay. I got to re-sing.
And then you had awesome people come and sing backing vocals.
Yeah, yeah, like Kat Edmondson came and did backing vocals.
You guys
vocals.
Friends?
Yeah, yeah. We're not like close bosom buddies, but we are. Yeah, not we're BFFs. Friends. We're not BFFs. She's really cool.
She is really cool.
Yeah. Has she been on the show?
She was on the show like one of the very first ones.
Whoa, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she's like
really
totally
nice to do that.
She's totally got it together too.
She really does. I haven't seen her since. Maybe I've seen her once.
Well, she doesn't live here anymore,
right?
So, we just did a Prairie Home Companion with her, and it was neat.
Yeah.
She,
wow. So
yeah.
You guys get to do some cool stuff.
We do.
How does that work? You know, I'll tell you. I'll be honest. That's a pretty impressive show, but I can't listen to it. Sometimes it annoys me.
That's okay. That's okay. Yeah. I mean,
you know what I mean?
You have
I'm
to
like
be
a wait, don't tell me person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how.
I can't always do wait, don't tell me. I have to be in. I can always do Terry Gross.
There's something about the Peter Sagal's smarter than you tone that I could see would be annoying.
I don't know. You know,
I saw him in a bathroom.
On what?
At the live WTF.
Did you say something to him? Like, hey, what's up? You're great.
I said, hey.
What? And did he like,
I didn't know
do
what
the nod or like the bro nod or anything?
He bro nodded.
Nice.
It was after the thing, and I was with these comics, and I was outside, and we were going somewhere else, and I was like, oh, I have to pee, hold on. And I guess everyone was gone from Esther's Follies, and I went in there, and I peed.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
You did it?
It was great.
Yeah.
And then...
Very relieving.
Very relieving. I turned around, and he was walking in, and I went, hey. And he went, yeah, yeah, they give me a bro nod.
See, it's, yeah. See, I'm no good at that stuff. I, like, if I see, you know, especially people like NPR people, or if I ever met Marc Maron, I'm like the world's worst germer. So I just, like, I either fangirl out and start babbling, or I just, like, try to be cool, or what I think is cool, and then I don't say anything.
You know what, though?
What's that?
I guess it's different when they see you play, because I was in a Skyrocket gig in New York, this fundraiser for a park there. And Lester Holt was singing along, you know, from NBC News,
mm-hmm.
Dateline,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
He was singing along?
He was in the audience and he was singing along. Cool. I was singing I Want You to Want Me and him and I guess his wife, who I later met, they were there. And as soon as I was like, oh my God, we finished that song and our set. And I just like ran right to him and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe you're here. I love you so much. And listen, man. We went out for drinks with him.
No.
Yeah.
We went out
the next year. He came, and the guy that you know the place, the Hill Country.
Yeah, the Hill Country Barbecue. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That what's the guy's name that owns it? It's that guy's thing.
Okay. Yeah.
He supports a park. Him and his wife.
Oh, sweet. I can't remember his name. I'm totally drawing a blank on their names. Drawing a blank.
Anyway, so he comes up to me when we get there the next year, and he mm-hmm. goes, "Hey, your buddy's looking for you." And I'm like, "Who?" And he's like, "Lester Holt. He was asking if you were here."
What? See, yeah.
Then we all went out with them afterwards.
Yeah, I would like to be that good.
Sometimes if you just run up, if you just come clean. Dude, I love you. You just say that. Dude, I love you. I can't believe this is happening to me.
Because I think what I try to do is I try to be like, oh, this happens to me all the time. Like, I'm fine.
I can't even pretend
totally
to do that.
Like, yeah. And then I just don't say anything. And then I just come off as, you know, I don't know.
Honesty is the best policy in those situations. Because they're going to catch you if you think you're being cool.
Yeah.
Your fly's going to be down or something. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, no problem.
Or they're just going to think you're kind of bitchy. Like, who are you? Like, yeah, I don't know.
Exactly.
I just really love you and I can't say it.
So what were we talking about before we got
no
to that?
I have no idea. God, we were talking about records. Oh, the laziest girl in town.
Okay, laziest girl in town. So you went in there, you did it in one shot with
the guys. We did it in one shot with the guys and it was great. It was like one of those sparkly experiences where you have like a vision. And it goes down the way that you kind of envision it, you know, which is not always the case in the studio.
Where'd you do it?
We did it over at Pismo, which is the Wheels recording studio. Yeah. And so it was cool. And then whatever vocals I didn't keep from that, I did like in my living room.
Yeah.
I would set up like a mic and the computer and I'd tell Dave to go take Liesl for a stroll. Yeah. And I would just do it until I felt happy with it, you know, because I tried to do on the last two records. I did them with Dave. And I tried to do it where he would, like, try to coach me through the final vocals, and it was no good. Like, we work really well together, except in that situation where he's trying to tell me what to do. So, yeah.
That's a tough one. Do you work well with other people in that situation?
I think I work better. I think I don't get my hackles up as much. Like, with Dave, I'll be like, you come in here and try to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, with someone else, I'll be like, oh, sure, I'll try that, you know.
Yeah. I just saw a guy a couple of days ago that I go back sometimes and I think about how difficult I was to work with at times in those situations. Like, seriously, one-on-one vocals with the guy. And mm-hmm. he's like, no, I know that you can. You're like, chef, fuck you.
Yeah.
I sing better than you'll ever be able to sing.
Yeah.
Or anyone you know.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. So, I saw him a couple of days ago, but I have that with someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there are just certain people who you like. You can't do it. And you can be fine with them in every other thing. But the studio makes people crazy.
And like, the singing, and it's just you.
Ah, yeah. And if you're not feeling it that day, like, especially if it's just, you know, if the pollen's up or something, it's like, I can't fucking do this. Like, this is not going to happen.
Or what about, have you ever done it when you're in a band? Same situation, same dude. But the other three guys in the band are in there. And every time he pushes the talkback button, everyone's telling you something.
Oh, God, no. Yeah.
Tell those guys to get out of the room. Then you become like the lead singer guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let Johnny have his space because he's doing some magic with his face.
I have never been in that exact one, but I have been where, like, I was doing background vocals for a record and there were like four or five people in the room. And I think I did it. When I did it, I just couldn't. couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't do what they wanted, and it sounded pitchy. And the more they asked me to do it, you know,
the worse. And it's like that. Hit the note.
Yeah, you can't hit the note, or like. Then there's the long pause before they touch the talkback, where you know that they're all talking about you and like talking shit and saying things.
You can see them, and they're like,
"That was great. Let's try it again." You're like, "Oh, you are all talking shit about me." Yeah, studio makes you.
That pause between the end of your take.
But when you're in, yeah.
And the person coming back and saying something to you is, I'm glad someone, I don't think anyone's ever talked about that on this show.
It's horrible.
And that's my least favorite, especially when you're singing on someone else's thing, it's on their dime.
Yeah. And you want to be the pro from Dover who comes in and knocks it out, man. And
you don't want to walk out and have people be like, "Oh, Elizabeth McQueen, I don't know how she got that fucking asleep at the wheel job. Yeah, that chick is a hack.
Yeah, she can't fucking do that. Yeah. Like, why did we hire her again?"
I get so nervous about that.
And I think I've been on a couple. I've done a couple things where, like, you know, then you listen. They give you, "Oh, here's a copy of the CD," and you listen to it. Like, did they use it? Can I, like, is that me? Did they hire someone else? I can't tell. I don't know. But I also, when you're in the control room and someone's in, like, the booth or something doing overdubs, and you're the one talking before the talkback button gets pushed, that's actually kind of fun. Yeah. You're like, they can't hear us. We can say what, blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's great. We think you can do better, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had that experience with Amy Mann.
You worked with Amy Mann on a
song of mine. And when she went in to sing, the producer guy was like, "Here, you do the thing. You tell her what you want." And I was like, "Okay." So then it was just my band and the engineer guy in there. And every time before I push the button, I go, "That fucking sucked." Hey.
We just want a little more pink in your voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think from now on, before talking back, I'm just going to stand there.
Just
and
pause.
Shrug and make really bad faces.
You're just going to do peas and carrots. Like, peas and carrots, peas and carrots, carrots, peas and carrots.
Oh, is that... Do you act? Oh, you acted in the thing, in the play.
Yeah, I do act. You were going to ask me if I acted, and I would actually have said no if you hadn't said, like, "Yeah, you do act in the play." But I don't act, like, outside of the play that Asleep at the Wheel puts on.
Right.
I have acted in school productions and stuff, but... I think acting is brutal. Like, not the acting itself, that's fun, but the, like... Ugh,
the life?
Like, well, just the going out for auditions and stuff.
Oh,
and
that would be
brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you've been to the auditions, right?
No, I mean, except for the Asleep at the Wheel auditions. I've never been to, like, a real life, real deal acting call where you bring your headshot and you do that.
I never
stuff.
Have a headshot. I just kind of go there. I'm like, "I'm Scott," and you're either the person that they're looking for. You're not. You know,
really?
They're never
I thought
looking
you had
for
to bring like a
role.
Headshot with like a CV or something like
you
that.
You don't if you're not really. You know, that's the thing is like they'll be like, "Oh, you know what I need? Kind of a girl with short hair with glasses, kind of like a nerdy." But then someone's gonna be like, "Oh, Elizabeth McQueen."
And then you go in and they're like, "Yes or no?"
You got to meet these people like Beth Sepko. They're casting people. And then that's how I would go on auditions because I told this agent one time, like, it was when I was married and my wife did stuff and they were like, "Oh, you know, you know, if you ever want to do it, we could probably get you some stuff." And so I'm like, "Oh, no way." Like, yeah.
Well, dude.
Shit, I've been waiting for an Oscar for years.
Yeah, for real.
So, my own sitcom, everything. And so then once I did go out on stuff, I was like, "Oh my God, don't ever send me to stuff again." Like Walker, Texas Ranger shit that was going on here in the 90s.
Oh, right.
But they did, you get there and there's literally 400 dudes
going
for your
thing.
And they're,
I don't think my ego can take it.
Serious. And you're just like, "Oh, I just kind of want $700 for standing there or $1,000. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so then I told my dude, I was like, "Dude, I can't do that. I can't do those things. They waste my whole day, and I'm terrible. When I get in there, I start laughing, and I'm just not really very good at it when it all comes down to it."
Right.
So he just started going like, "Oh, you know what? They need a little guy that's with messy hair to stand in the background. And so then when I go to auditions, I walk in, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, that's it.
You're the guy.
Yeah.
Here we go. Yeah.
Don't comb your hair.
Nice.
You know, don't tuck your shirt in and you don't have to iron anything. Just show up just like you, just exactly like you are." Because then they're just looking for that kind of thing.
Right. Well, maybe that's something to look into.
Aspire to.
I had no idea that it worked that way.
Well, you know, I used to get stuff.
like once every couple of years. One time I got in this, I would be Guy's guitar, like I was the guitar player for Guy Pearce in a movie. He was the guy from Memento.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right on.
I smoked weed with him in his trailer.
Sweet.
Like as if just not in the movie.
It wasn't in the movie, like we're hip cat musicians.
But like I was just literally a guy in a background holding a guitar. And the work was spread out over enough days, and they have to pay you in between the days you're not working. I made like $2,500.
Do you have to join the union for that, like SAG or something?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I think you do whenever you get a job.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, sure, I'll join this thing.
Cool. Man, that's pretty
so
sweet.
So you should act.
I'd love to act.
Yeah. So, but, okay,
I don't have
sorry.
The time right now. I would act, Johnny, but I just don't have the time right now. I mean, I'm sure I'd be a great actress. No.
Where do you perform this, the Sleep at the Wheel thing?
This the Sleep at the Wheel play?
Yeah.
You know, we did it at...
Someone else.
We just did it at the Zach Scott Theater in February or something like that. I can't remember.
Someone else I've interviewed is in it.
Hmm.
A girl. A young girl. Ruby Jane.
Ruby Jane. Yeah, Ruby Jane Smith.
Okay,
go ahead. Ruby Jane. She's so great. I love Ruby Jane Smith.
Yeah.
She's been in since she was like 11 or something. The last time we did it was at Zach Scott. And the word on the street was that was like the last time it was going to get done. So I don't know if it'll be resurrected.
What is it? It's the Bob Wills.
It's story like
of Bob
the
Wills.
Like yeah, like a biopic, but in musical form of the story of Bob Wills. So and I play Minnie Pearl, so I get to do a big howdy and everything at the end. I look strangely like Minnie Pearl without the glasses.
See that.
It's kind
and
of
the
weird.
Hat.
Yeah, with the hat and the tag.
Were you ever that for Halloween just out of laziness?
No.
Like, I already got the hat.
You know, you got to go big for Halloween. You got to go.
Oh, you need the more 50s glasses, like these kind of that go up on the side.
I used to have the 50s glasses, but I can't go there. I can't go back there. I've got to go nerdy, big Elvis Costello glasses from now on.
Do you consider yourself a nerd?
Yeah, definitely. I think always, like, self-identified nerd. But in a good way, like,
yeah.
You know,
hey.
Smart and into
cool.
sci-fi. And
tell me what sci-fi. Did you see the new Star Trek? I saw it in 3D.
No, I don't like the new Star Treks.
They're... Oh, you don't?
No.
Do you like the old ones?
Yeah, well, the old ones are funny, you know, especially if you're smoking pot. The old ones are hilarious. But I'm more like a Doctor Who fan, do you know? Are you hip to the new Doctor Who?
I'm not. I acknowledge that it's there. I just remember
seeing
Doctor Who
it?
When I was a little kid, like the original
like,
Doctor Who,
they're
and just
like,
going like, that is sad.
Because
Star Wars had come out.
Totally different things.
Yeah.
I can't really watch old Doctor Who, although really big aficionados will, but I can't really do it.
So is it really that good? It's on Netflix, right? I can watch
it. Yeah, you should totally do it. The first season, touch and go.
Spend the rest of the day.
Second season, totally great. Like, yeah, second season on is great.
Can you start on the second season, or do you need the first season as backup?
You probably need the first season
do you
as
like,
backup.
See, that's the thing is, like, I don't like fantasy.
Oh, well,
really
then
don't.
You probably should not watch Doctor Who. What do you watch, like?
Like Mad Men.
See, I can't do Mad Men.
You can't?
No. They got, like, first of all, it moves really slowly.
It does.
And I get really frustrated with everyone.
But it's
everyone.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just very real people with real shortcomings.
But there's really no, I don't, are there any characters in Mad Men that you like?
Yeah.
Empathize with? Sympathize with?
Oh, yeah.
With?
Yeah.
Okay.
All of them.
Because they all seem pretty awful to me. Yeah. Maybe I'll watch Mad Men someday. It just moves so slowly.
We would be terrible TV buddies.
Yeah, we would not be TV buddies. I would be talking all over your Mad Men and making like rude remarks.
And then
you would be rolling your eyes with Doctor Who. Like,
that's
oh, that
true.
That would never happen.
Ugh. Right. Oh.
Fantasy. What a waste of time.
David Sanger, he likes the sci-fi.
He does. We actually named our daughter, our second daughter, Willow, after Buffy's best friend on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
See, I've not seen that either.
Oh, now that is like, that is
that's
the best show that's ever been on TV.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's the girl in it?
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah. And it's really good.
It's really good. Joss Whedon, the guy who created it and wrote it, is like a genius. Don't get
what
me started on
do?
Buffy. He did the Avengers movie, the last Avengers
oh, okay.
movie.
Okay, okay, that's where I know his name.
Yeah.
Did you like that last Avengers movie? Did
I
you
liked
see
it, yeah, for like a big box action movie. I thought it was really good.
Did you see Prometheus?
I did, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you like that? I didn't like it at all.
I liked it. We talked a lot about it on the bus.
Yeah.
We debated what is the goo, you know, like, what is the black goo? What's the deal with Prometheus?
Oh, see, I couldn't even get past the... Did she have sex with the captain when they were going to do it? Why didn't they show it? Why was she so weird? And I didn't have a good time.
I think they did have sex. That's why she had that... Spoiler alert to if you haven't seen Prometheus. That's why she had that, you know, alien baby thing.
No, that's another movie I saw. That's a different movie where she had an alien baby with Johnny Depp.
No, I don't know what you're talking about now with Johnny Depp.
The Astronaut's Wife?
No.
That's a real movie. That's the only movie I have ever gone to see where at the end, everyone booed. Oh, no. At the end, it was real quiet. And this guy goes, fuck that. And then everyone's just started booing. It was so
bad. That's so great, though.
Yeah, it was like Johnny Depp and Charlize Theron. He's an astronaut. And something happens and gets in his suit. And then he impregnates her. And they have an alien baby. And it's
do they raise it and care for it as their own?
It's literally like one of those movies that is literally the worst movie of all time.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's one of those movies.
Oh, I'll have to watch it sometime when I'm in the right frame of mind.
That's weird. I don't see. Maybe I just checked out.
You may have Prometheus. Checked out. There, we discussed it a lot and watched it a couple times. And one of our road manager was really into it and made us watch it. And then we all discussed it.
Who's the guy that directed that one? He's the aliens guy.
What is that guy's name? I don't know.
Russ? No.
I don't know. I'd have to Google it. I have no memory anymore. I have an iPhone. All I have to do.
Do you feel bad about that?
Not at all.
How do people find you? There's an ElizabethMcQueen.com.
It's Elizabeth-McQueen.com.
Okay.
Because when I was recovering from having my first baby, I didn't renew ElizabethMcQueen.com, and it got taken over by a Japanese site, and I can't get it back. So Elizabeth-McQueen.
Okay. Elizabeth-McQueen.
And then there's Elizabeth McQueen Music on Facebook.
Okay.
And
you tweet?
I do. I am a Liz McQueen on Twitter, and then I think I'm Elizabeth McQueen on
Instagram
and Vine.
Do you Instagram? Are you a Viner? I have not downloaded Vine.
I love the idea of Vine, and I have Vined, and
I can't have one more thing.
Yeah, my whole social media thing is like sometimes I really like it, like if I've had enough sleep,
sure,
and I'm in a good place, and. Like, I have thoughts in my head that I want to relay to the world. Like, it's really fun, and I'll get really into it in the conversation, but I'm basically, like, an introvert. So the moment that I get overwhelmed at all, I close down, and I can't, and, you know, like, I'll open Twitter, and I'll be like, oh, stop talking to
stop
me.
Yelling
like,
at
stop.
Me. Yeah.
You know, or, like, Facebook, like, stop posting pictures of your lunch. Like, I can't deal with it. So I'm, like, an intermittent, but I really do, like,
what do you post? Vine. Do you post pictures of the kids?
I post some pictures of the kids. I try not to go too kid heavy. It's hard not to sometimes because we're around them a lot. But
sure.
But you know, I mean, that's another thing. Like, they deserve to have. I try not to tell stories about them or, you know, like cute stories because, like, I hated it when my parents just told their friends cute stories about me and I overheard it. You know, like, I can't imagine a generation of kids. Who maybe strangers
post
know these
on
stories
on Facebook and like oh
like
my
so-and-so
God.
Said the cutest thing you know and I if my Facebook were just people I knew intimately that'd be one thing but there's a lot of people I'm friends with who I don't know in a physical sense you know
either.
So yeah it's a weird time though I feel very old sometimes like
how,
in between
I'm
36
wow,
so
quick
yeah
you I'm quickly not, came out with that
I'm married to a 52-year-old, so it's like, for me...
You really throw
I'm
his
the,
age around.
I am the young chick, yes.
You are. I had a girlfriend 17 years younger than me.
Yeah,
she
see?
Broke up with me last year. Dumped me.
Intergenerational love gone bad.
But you... when are you going to make a new album?
I hope within the next year. So
okay.
This remix project that we've done...
It's going to come out in August.
It's going to come out in August, late August.
What's the name of it?
It's called The Laziest Remix.
You got to use the regular title of the album and then throw in
and
a
then
twist.
Throw in a thing and
I love that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And then so I hope to kind of do a thing that's similar to The Laziest Remix. We're taking like an old forms but with new instruments and new kind of like coming at it from different musical ideas.
Oh, I love that.
That's really like what I hope to do.
It'd be awesome if you could get like some weird, like underground bedroom producer guy. You know what
I mean? Yeah, yeah. That's kind of the idea. I think I'll probably work with David Lazaroff some, and I have some other friends who do electronic music, and that world is. I mean, I've been in the roots world for so long, where it's about like playing your real instruments.
Oh my god.
That this whole like digital kind of like or funky old analog world is like totally exciting to me, you know?
Yeah. When people mix stuff, do you listen to like Daft Punk?
I have been listening to the new Daft Punk because it's super accessible and it's great. All the time, yeah.
By the way, that's my summer jam.
Which one? They Get Lucky? Yeah.
That's going to be my jam all summer.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Do you have a summer jam?
My summer jam? Probably.
Do you lose summer jams when you have kids? Do you go like, no, I don't need a summer jam anymore?
You know what? The kids are really into...
Yeah, what are they into?
They're into Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots.
Oh, yeah.
They're actually into the song.
Hell yeah.
So they make us play it on repeat. So I feel like that'll be our summer jam, which is great. Yeah. And that's such a great record.
Such a great record.
Like, it's all about... death and kind of, I mean, the whole record is just about sickness and death and the acceptance of that stuff. And I don't know, maybe at 36, it's the first time I'm actually feeling that, you know, like, I don't know. Do you ever feel just like feel your mortality?
Or 44, yeah.
Like you feel
it's
it
all
like,
I feel.
Like, oh, this is
it's not all I feel.
No, but I don't know. Maybe we did have extended adolescence that I'm 36 and it's the first time that I've really been like, dealing with this concept of all gonna die. Yeah. And that's
my grandparents are getting real old.
Yeah.
And like seeing that.
Are they still alive?
Two of them are, yeah.
Nice. I've got one.
One of them's like, I mean, you know. I mean, he's not like ill. He's just fading.
Well, you know I mean, how old is
anything.
He? Is he like
he's 90?
Yeah.
So he's like my grandma's birthday the other day, her 90th birthday. He's like 92. So it was her 90th birthday. We go to this thing, he comes outside. Says nothing for about 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Goes inside, but literally nothing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you, you know, he's probably fucking tired. You know what I mean? Yeah, like yeah, 90 years old.
He's been a doctor
old,
his
like...
whole life. He had to flee Cuba.
Yeah.
Four girls, four daughters.
Oh my gosh.
Hispanic dude, wild, you know, hippie, you know, weed smoking.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Ah,
daughters.
Sweet. Yeah. I mean, you gotta
just
like.
No one did
like...
what he said.
Well, yeah. He probably tired him out in itself. It's like. Yeah. When you're 90, man, it's like it's going. It's breaking down.
Sure.
What are you going to do? Is your grandma totally with it, though?
You can see signs of her. Because she was always like, you know, always going and like, mm-hmm. And then you can kind of see her going a little bit.
Yeah.
Slowing down a bit. She's still, you know, we talk all the time.
Hey, man, if you're lucky enough to live to 90, it's like you don't have to say anything. You did it.
See, but that's what's fucked up is I'm halfway there, literally.
You know what? I was listening to the Lazaroff, and you were talking about this. Right. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's when I went the other day.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's, but...
like, you're like, I've already heard this podcast.
No, but I was thinking about it. It's like, you're like halfway there, but like 40, it took you a long fucking time to get to 44.
Sure, you know? But then you realize I'm halfway to the point where you're falling down and you can't fall down.
You hope you're halfway
fall down,
there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You hope. If you're lucky.
Worse than I thought.
Yeah, if you're lucky, man, yeah. You're halfway there. And it gets even crazier when you have like... kids, because I don't know if I die, like whatever, I've lived a good life, but like now it's like, well, first of all, I need to stay alive to take care of them, and like God forbid something should happen to them. I mean,
yeah.
It's like
my grandparents lost a daughter.
Oh, I can't even like
yeah
I can't even imagine. So yeah
let's talk about something else.
Okay, yeah,
something
let's
more
talk
fun
about something. Cool.
Were you doing this summer with the Sleep at the Wheel?
We are touring a bunch, so we're going to start going out mostly weekends in June, and then end of July, August, we're just gone. We're going to go to the West Coast, Colorado, and some out west, and then, like, Midwest. I'm trying to visualize it in my head. Just all
just
over.
Going.
Just going. I mean, we work pretty hard.
Yeah, and you guys kind of do the same. Skyrocket doesn't go out for weeks, but we work every weekend.
You work every
much.
Weekend, yeah. Yeah.
That's a nice way to do it.
It is a nice way to do
what
it.
What about Elizabeth McQueen shows?
Well,
any this summer?
I am going to be doing on July 9th, 7th, I'm going to be doing a show in St. Louis with Brothers Lazaroff, like a brunch.
Okay.
At this place called the Urban Chestnut. And we're going to be doing all the stuff from the record that's going to be like our same. We're going to release a song. It's called Gone Solid Gone There. And then after that, I really don't know. I mean, it's really hard to book solo shows with the wheel. You probably find this with your own stuff. Like you.
Yeah.
I mean, because I.
Yeah, right now we have kind of a slow summer, but I don't want to book my stuff because what if something comes up?
What if something comes in and then you. Yeah, you can't, like, I can't call up and say, oh, I got a gig.
Ray Benson.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, I got a gig.
Hey, Ray Benson, I can't play that theater in Omaha because I have a Flipnautics.
Yeah, exactly. So it's hard to book out ahead.
Nothing against Flipnautics.
No, there's nothing
against That's a tough thing to justify to somebody.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But if there are more Elizabeth McQueen shows, I'll let you know.
Okay.
I really like your music. I think we should play a show together
sometime.
Really? Yeah.
I would like that,
too. That Whitney Houston song has been in my head, like...
Oh, thank you.
...all day. And it's such a great, like... It surprised me at the end when, you know, it's okay, we love you, Whitney Houston. Because I was sitting there going, like, damn, he's talking about, like, every addict I've ever known or have ever been.
That's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I was going for. But plus, I didn't know what to say in there, and it fit syllabically. And it kind of made me laugh.
Was it about her? Like, did you start recording it
about
her?
Like, at the end, I wanted to do it. No, that's really probably one of the most personal songs I've ever written. But
really?
I didn't know what to say at the end, and I wanted to have a different vibe come in.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I didn't know what to say. So when I was kind of scatting, I said that, and it made, like, literally, I laughed out loud and stopped and rewound it. And I was like, I'm just going to sing that now.
Yeah, it's great.
And then, like, everyone I would play it for, it was like one of those things where you go, I'm going to change this at the end. And they're like, are you kidding me? That is awesome.
You got to keep it. Yeah. Yeah. It's always weird. I think the stuff that's like the most, you know, I don't know, the most real sometimes is the stuff that you don't want to put out there. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote a song called Mind of Men. That's kind of a man-hating song.
Oh, really?
And I was like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was not going to record it. I was like, we were talking about songs to do for the record. And Dave said, like, you should record Mind of Men. And I was like, no way. People will actually know how I feel about men, and I.
But you don't feel that way about all men.
Oh, I absolutely feel that way about men.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think to a certain extent, every man has that in him. You know, even the nights. I mean, I've been around men without other women around for a long time, so.
Oh.
I feel like, you know, even the nicest, most sensitive dude has, like.
Closet Draper. Closet.
Closet Draper. Yeah. I like it. Yes, exactly. Has a closet draper in him who'd like to just, you know, objectify and tap that ass. Like,
and then right when you're walking up, meeting me for the first time, I'm playing some gig on Sunday. And then this girl goes, oh, my friend's going to. And I mean, I said that kind of absurdly because, like, what
yeah,
are you gonna,
well, of course.
But what is that girl going to do for me when I go play this gig?
Yeah, she's going to give me a blowjob, right?
That was
because
it was absurd.
Yes.
And so, but I didn't mean it really.
Don't worry. I don't worry. Person. I'm not upset about it anymore. You used to really upset me. Like, I really wanted it.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, through the interview,
you've softened
your feelings a little bit. Like, I'm not upset about it anymore. Like,
no,
I
was just sitting here holding a grudge for the whole time. No, I'm not upset about, you know, men.
I understand that.
You know, it's like, it is how it is. I think it's nature.
It's a tough thing to fight your instincts and try and be civilized.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's my neighbor, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's a perfectly nice person.
Right.
I would think sometimes there are times when I have this thought, like, oh, maybe she wants to hook up. But you can't just hook up with someone.
And now you're putting it out there on the radio, so.
Oh, no. Okay. I've talked about it at brunch before with friends.
Oh, right on. You know. Oh. It's a possibility for everyone,
look,
I
who
guess.
Cares?
Come on. We're animals. Come on.
Everybody. And to me, and you know, I've been single and sitting here in this apartment for a while. And then, like, even the other day when I went to Saxon Pub and the girl said, hey, what can I get you, honey? And I was playing, right? She's going to just call me honey. People say that stuff. I was like, oh, I wonder if she would like to go out with me. She seems to like me. She calls me honey. And then I'm like, why are you this weird guy that's like.
Right on. So you're definitely looking is what you're saying.
I don't
saying.
Think I am.
No?
No, because when I find people, I'm like, oh, I like living by myself. It's really cool.
Right. Yeah.
No one really wants to. I want my photos to be of me and Wolfson. That's a painting he did of us.
Oh,
that's
Todd
us happily existing.
Yeah. That's pretty great.
And the fucked up thing is, for a guy that takes photos for a living, my eyes are not blue. They're green.
But yet his eyes are green.
His eyes
are his eyes green?
I know that.
Wow. I'm not an eye looker, though. I would just assume especially that your eyes were blue. No. Not with anyone, man. I never know what color people's eyes are. Like,
really?
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm not like a looking like a noticer of that. Now, and I would say your eyes were blue if I was looking at them from over here.
Oh, that must mean there's, I think it's a shirt. Sometimes something I'm wearing changes it.
Yes, yes.
Is there anything I'm missing?
Did we talk about music?
We talked a lot about
music. We did talk a lot about music. Yeah,
I just talked about a lot of stuff in a circle.
It was fun. That was a good conversation.
I really enjoyed myself.
Yeah, totally.
I like when I get to meet people through this.
Yeah, this is really nice. I'm really glad. And you're going to have Matt Eske come on.
But this is going to happen for a time. Yeah, because one of your records came out on there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You guys know each other. He's a big fan of yours. He was the guy that told me to get you.
Yes, you did.
Thank you, Matt Eske.
Yeah, Matt Eske. You rock.
We are going to do it. But he sent me a thing, and it was like a month from now. He's like, I have this afternoon. And then I was like, let's talk. Yeah, let's get closer to that and figure it out.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So, cool. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for having me. Check out Elizabeth-McQueen.com.
Yes. And
.com.
Yeah, and I'll get you a copy of the record when it comes out.
Thank you.
Cool.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
She's very cool, right? Man, that was great. I love talking to her, man. So I got another new friend, Elizabeth McQueen. She's fantastic. I'm looking forward to getting to see her play. Yeah, I am. I am. Everyone go out there, check out Elizabeth-McQueen.com. Find out what she's doing when she's coming to a town near you. Go see her with the Sleep at the Wheel. That's such a prestigious gig. So awesome. And hey, when you're on the internet, you're out there, go to the iTunes, subscribe to this podcast, comment, leave a rating. It helps us with our overall rating. Maybe we could have like one of the top 10 music podcasts out there. What do you think? Can you do that? Yeah. All right. How about a little bit more Elizabeth McQueen? Bye-bye.
That you should lie back and take it. I know, sounds cruel. No woman should play the fool. You've got to understand the mind of men. Thank you. But I can't. You've got to understand.